This special podcast, hosted by award-winning radio documentary maker David Freudberg, is presented by the Compassionate Care Initiative at the University of Virginia School of Nursing.
Sophomore year was when we first left the classroom setting for our clinicals, and it was definitely scary. There's about six of us that go with one instructor, and it's crazy. It's you get one patient and you're basically thrown into it, but it's such a good way to learn.
That's Allie Lenhoff, a senior nursing student with an interest in pediatrics at Endicott College in Beverly, Massachusetts. Her roommate, also a senior nursing student there, is Stephanie Payne.
The first clinical was definitely the scariest because we just weren't really sure what to expect, and we weren't really comfortable walking into patients' rooms and having so much control over what to do with them and giving them their medications and doing their assessments. And then as the years went on, clinical became more exciting because it became a little bit not easier, but you became much more comfortable in the situations, and you were more comfortable talking to the nurses and the doctors and asking people for help.
When you say it's a little scary at first, what is scary?
I think the fact that we are not used to the hospital setting, we learn in the classroom, but then you have to take those skills that you learn and put them to use is so different than when we're practicing maybe in our simulation lab, because these are real people that we're dealing with, and I mean, honestly, their lives are in our hands at that point in time, and it's overwhelming, but it's exciting, too.
These bright, caring young people will soon be challenged to apply their newfound knowledge in a famously demanding occupation. And nurse educators in different regions of the United States are thinking deeply about ways to make it easier for the new nurses to endure.
You know, I think if we look back through history, we will see that nurses give and then kind of keel over. And I think we really want people to come into this profession for the long haul.
That's Dori Fontaine in Charlottesville. From her vantage point at the famous campus founded and designed by Thomas Jefferson, Dori serves as dean at the University of Virginia School of Nursing. She's a national leader in efforts to advance the state of nursing education toward bringing up a new wave of practitioners, nurses who have learned skills of self-care that cultivate a capacity for personal and professional resilience, and who are then well-positioned to provide optimal care for the whole person, the patient who nurses work hard to serve.
We really have to say that it is okay to care for yourself and to really build compassion across the profession, that people will look out for each other. And I think it starts as a student. And many of us that have been prepared as healthcare providers recently or in the past, I don't think self-care was viewed as positively as today.
Which is ironic because we're talking about a healthcare profession.
Totally. Well, just look at Florence Nightingale in the Crimea, the lady with the lamp, you know, working 20 hours a day and having her nurses constantly there. I mean, they did a lot of wonderful work. Our profession, you know, she is the leader. But again, she was not known for taking care of herself, for sure.
In this podcast, part of our series Resilient Nurses, we'll listen to nursing deans, professors, and to students at various stages of development in their nursing careers. We'll start here in Charlottesville, then in the next half hour, travel north to Minneapolis to hear from an inspiring group of nursing educators and students at the University of Minnesota. Our focus is to explore emerging approaches to training the next generation of providers for compassionate care of patients and compassionate self-care. We call our program Nurses of the Future. Gina DeGennaro has practiced oncology and end-of-life palliative care nursing for over 30 years. She's an associate professor at the University of Virginia, teaching in the doctoral program at the School of Nursing. and she developed an Introduction to Resilience course.
So we tell the students this course is all about you. This is for you to learn about you. It's about developing an awareness of how they respond to events, how they respond to thoughts, to increase their awareness of what thoughts are coming into their mind. So if they're noticing negative thoughts, to have an acceptance of those thoughts that, okay, this is what I'm noticing today. Instead of being very judgmental, yes. So it's an acceptance practice, and it's also a body awareness practice, so they learn how their body is responding.
In the hectic rhythm common in nursing, it can be easy for practitioners to tune out warning signals their own body may be telling them. Perhaps it's a sign to slow down or to take a moment to recenter. And in the clinical setting, where time is frequently of the essence, stopping to regroup might seem like a luxury. But finding ways to do that is key to maintaining self-care for nurses.
They choose a number of different strategies and resilience modalities, but they're very personal and they're all very different. So while one student might return to the arts, maybe they were a musician or a painter as a younger person, they'll return to that for this course, and they'll log how their body is feeling at different times when they're doing this, how they've been feeling, what their reactions to stress were, how they've managed the breath, how they've learned to be more aware with the breath throughout the course of the semester. They have hours, practice experiential hours, where they will mindfully exercise, where they will just focus on work that they're doing in exercise, in running or in swimming. They have designed sleep care protocols when they've noticed that their sleep is distressed, where when they begin to notice that. So we teach them an awareness of what are you noticing in your body, and what would you like to do to try to treat that for yourself.
Students at the resilience course may be experiencing a wide range of stress-related symptoms, whether from common academic pressures or the special conditions encountered in clinical training. For example, students undergoing gastrointestinal disturbances may opt for a mindful eating protocol.
And they might choose one meal a day where they eat it in silence. They share gratefulness for the food, for where it came from. I would say an underlying theme of our course is mindfulness, being really present and aware, but it's also gratefulness. So sometimes when one student had was very stressed and anxious every morning when she went to clinical. And so we talked about different things that she might do to try to address that. And one thing that worked for her was as she walked to the clinical rotation in the morning, she said, "Thank you, thank you, thank you," and just repeated that, and that was an opportunity for her to take care of patients. And that worked for her, so that when she arrived at the hospital, she wasn't as breathless. The students are able to then notice all of the symptoms that they have, that they're short of breath, their hands are sweaty, they are able to report headaches, you know, things that they have going on that once they put their self-care plan into place, those things are reduced.
I think it's very pertinent with nurses because often we have a 30-minute break during a 12-hour shift, period.
Tim Cunningham is assistant professor of nursing at UVA and serves there as assistant director of the Compassionate Care Initiative. He's an emergency pediatric trauma nurse.
And in those 30 minutes, we're supposed to use the bathroom, hydrate, eat food. So I think with a gratitude practice, especially looking at food, that can help. You still consume, you know, you still are going to have time to eat the food, even if you have 30 minutes or less. Some days we don't have any breaks, and same for physicians. But having those practices and taking even a few milliseconds, that can mean the world in both enjoying food, processing the food, and recognizing that even in a short break, you can still consume nutritious food and take care of yourself. So eating, I think, is really important for medical professionals, and recognizing how we eat or don't is really essential.
And they have written back to us after they've graduated to say, you know, everybody needs this course. Everybody needs to be able to learn how to become more aware of how their body is feeling in different situations and how to learn how to really calmly respond to that. that was one of the things that really helped them, you know, during their school time here.
Healthcare dollars today are stretched ever thin at the same time as the United States faces a shortage of nurses. This is related to our aging population. Today, more Americans are over age 65 than ever before, and the incidence of chronic disease requiring additional medical resources is on the rise. So the up-and-coming generation of nurses will enter a work environment often characterized by high demand. Dean Dory Fontaine.
You might have 4, 5, 6 other patients with competing demands and family members that all want answers. You know, when are they going to make rounds and are they going for this test? And they said they might go home tomorrow. Is that going to, all of this is coming at you.
So what is the skill of being able to be that air traffic controller where you have all these stimuli bombarding you and you nevertheless work to be fully present to the needs of the various human beings?
Trying to stay calm. And, you know, I always say to our students, people are watching you all the time. So you need to be that calm presence. Even if you don't feel like it inside, you need to feel that you can handle the situation, and pausing to be reflective and respond without, being stressed and raising your voice. And so we really are trying to teach our students to be reflective and to feel confident that they have the wisdom to choose to do the right thing. And it doesn't happen overnight. These are 18, 19, 20-year-olds. And they're in an environment, as we've said, where they're seeing a lot and listening to a lot of harshness.
So just to follow up on that, one of the things that I always talk to students about is when you go into a situation, in a healthcare situation, where things are a little bit hairy, the first thing you should do is take your own pulse.
Physician Julie Hayslip specializes in pediatric critical care and teaches at the UVA School of Nursing.
The idea that if you are revved up and your sympathetic nervous system is kicked in and you're going in with all of this, nervous energy, then you're going to be in a mode where you're reacting instead of acting intentionally. And so this idea of just recognizing, okay, I've been triggered in some way, and I need to stop and take that deep breath before I do anything so that I can make sure that I'm doing what I really intend to do.
Because the stakes can be high for patients' well-being and for healthcare institutions' budgets when the quality of care is compromised. If providers are frazzled, it can lead to medical errors and lapses in care. They carry a high human and financial price tag.
There's a fair amount of research that's going on now that actually links quality and patient safety and the caliber of the care that's provided to the well-being of clinicians. What they found was there was an association between burnout of nurses and physicians and hospital-acquired infections, so central line infections, urinary tract infections, and ventilator-associated pneumonia. And this is a major source of morbidity in our hospitalized population. And so now we're able actually to start making some correlations between the level of burnout of clinicians and the incidence of some of these things that are happening in healthcare systems.
And the risks of burnout for new nurses fresh from the classroom are significant. Dory Fontaine.
We are producing here at the University of Virginia School of Nursing several hundred nurses a year. And the statistics are that about 37% are in the workforce and want to leave after that first year. Only about 14% do, but the fact that a third really have a broken heart and it's not what they signed up for, You know, the patients are sick, there's not enough staff, the electronic medical record gets in the way.
So a priority for nursing education is to train students in certain competencies that will empower them amidst the stresses of modern nursing to withstand and even thrive in the clinical setting.
Some of the practices that we are advocating for our students are some very basic ideas. So taking a deep breath before you go in a patient's room, when you wash your hands, take a deep breath, kind of center yourself, ground through your feet, stand tall, and be ready to walk in that room. Nurses wash their hands 100 times a day, maybe more, and we're telling our students some of these very simple things. And I think the good part of this is every time we teach this, we're reinforcing it for ourselves, because everyone has been a practicing nurse, many still are, and are also teaching, or are physician colleagues. And the benefits of this is it's a nice cycle that we are reinforcing what we all know to be good practices.
You're listening to Nurses of the Future, an exploration of new directions in nursing that are intended to help nurses develop greater capacities to provide whole person care of patients, and in the process to care for themselves. I'm David Freudberg. We continue our visit at the University of Virginia School of Nursing.
When a nurse enters a room with a patient and a nurse has a calm presence about her, him or her, and is able to really interact with the patient, being present with them, at least my experience is that the patients notice that.
Gina DiGennaro focuses on improving symptom management at the bedside.
The patients appreciate that, and they can tell when someone is genuinely listening to them and present with them, and that they are the only person in the room for that nurse. And that might translate into feeling really well cared for and being heard when there are things that they need to have done get taken care of later on in the day.
So you're saying when a nurse is inwardly quiet, it facilitates greater responsiveness and attunement to the patient?
To the patient's needs. When a nurse enters a room and she herself is more aware of how she is feeling and then translates that to the patient, as in, I want now to take the best care of you and to be here for you, and I will be here for you all day, and the patient hears that, then the patient, I would imagine, would feel a lot more confidence in just having that interaction with the nurse, rather than a nurse who might come in and be looking at a computer or looking somewhere else or talking to someone else or over the patient. So I think that the eye contact, I think that the touching, all of the things that we do when we really are connecting with another human being are really some of the very important things that we bring to each encounter.
And it's in these tender patient encounters that a synergy may occur. Some of the skills that nurses develop in taking care of themselves can inform their interactions with patients. This can include techniques that nurses may demonstrate for patients at the bedside.
We teach the students that what they learn about taking a moment with the breath or taking a moment to pause, those are all techniques that they can teach their patients. So that if they enter a room and a patient is breathing rapidly or a patient's pulse is very rapid, they could actually sit, be with the patient, hold a patient's hand, and teach the patient to breathe. Teach the patient to breathe with them and to follow their breath and help the patient learn that technique. And our students do have stories of how they've connected some of these practices with patients and been able to teach them so that they can use them later on when they need them, when they're alone.
So what does drawing from one's own experience add to the ability of a nurse to then explain this practice to a patient and teach the patient about it?
So drawing from my own experience in dealing with physical pain.
Tim Cunningham.
and learning techniques of breathing through pain, both pain that I bring onto myself when I'm training and running 60 miles, or pain from accidents and injuries. I've learned that through breathing, focusing on the pain where it is, allowing the breath to kind of move the pain through my body and let it then exit somewhere. And I visualize pain sort of as water flowing through a creek or something that's moving and not stagnant and not holding on. A trick that I use working in the emergency department that I've worked both with pediatric patients and adult patients is when a patient comes in severe pain and I'm giving them pain medication, if it's morphine, if it's IV ketorolac, as I'm slowly pushing the medication, I'll tell the patient, one thing that you can do to help yourself right now, I recognize you're in pain. It sounds really awful, but this is something that you can do that will help. As I'm pushing this medication and I show them the syringe so they can see me actually pushing the medication, I say, I want you to take deep breaths and I want you to visualize how that pain is changing as I'm pushing this medication. And I never say it's going to go away because that would be a lie. But I say it's going to change, and you're going to notice that change. It's nice when you're pushing morphine or Dilaudid because you notice that change very quickly when you feel it. But even with slower-acting pain medications, if a patient is breathing and more aware of where the pain is, they'll notice the subtle changes as it moves through their body. And then afterwards, I check back in with them, and I say, you know, did the pain medication help? Yes or no? Did the breathing help? And often people say, yes, the breathing helped, even if the pain medication didn't seem to work. So I think for me personally, and I think also with patients, it's a way to empower the patient and say, in this moment of sickness, you might feel like you have no control over anything. Aha, you actually can control your breathing. And I'm going to work with you in controlling your breathing. And I think sometimes when patients regain a sense of control, that can help mitigate symptoms.
And so does this build on your own personal experience?
It absolutely builds on my own personal experience in managing my own pain, and also imagining managing my own emotional pain from traumatic experiences that I've had in my own life. When everything feels like it's falling apart, my breath is still happening.
About some of the special skills taught to nursing students through the University of Virginia's Compassionate Care Initiative. And for the students themselves, the prospect of entering healthcare can feel a little daunting. Evie Stinger, raised in Northern Virginia, liked science in high school and sought out the personal interaction that nurses have with patients. And that means the well-being of real people is on the line.
There's just a lot of possibility for error, and it's not like something like advertising where if you mess up, you know, the product isn't sold. It's someone's life. So that's scary to me because there's a lot of different things that can go wrong if you do something incorrectly. And just knowing all of that, you can study it, but I think, at least in my experience in clinical, it's different than in the classroom.
So I think the biggest thing that concerns me right now is getting wrapped up in this, oh, well, it's always been done this way.
Jane Muir, also a Virginian, majored in Spanish language and nursing as an undergraduate. She decided to become a nurse when a friend with a brain tumor was impressed by nurses who especially advocated for their patients.
Being somebody who's a new product out of this curriculum and institution where, you know, we want to be critical thinking nurses, we want to be present, we want to be aware, we want to take care of ourselves, we want to be resilient. And coming into a community where, you know, there are nurses who may not have necessarily been educated in that environment, or maybe they've seen so much, they've, you know, been desensitized from some things just from many years of working. So I think that's something that I fear is, you know, not only do I have to be resilient in terms of the stress that I face, but resilient in terms of the values that I developed when I was a nurse, and knowing that, you know, people may say, like, well, that's not realistic to do this or that, like, knowing that it is possible because, you know, my teachers have paved the way for me and told me, like, this is possible to be balanced, and it's possible to be aware and present with your patients and keep that going to provide good care.
And maintaining balance is an essential and sometimes elusive life skill, especially for healthcare providers. To Jane Muir, it's a relevant theme in her interactions with patients who may be struggling to regain a sense of balance in lifestyle behaviors.
Relaying to patients that life is a balance and it's not about being perfect. It's not about eating perfect 90% of the time. It's not about exercising every day vigorously. It's just about taking small steps forward, like one component at a time, because often we have patients who present with multiple medical complications, and we want to target every single thing. Oftentimes, I just feel like it's our job to provide patient education, which can be very overwhelming for patients. And I just think relaying, we got to start with one thing, and it's a balance, and we don't have to be hard on ourselves. And it's about spending more time with the people who in our lives who we love, and it's about having the ability to feel present day to day. I think if we can relay that to our patients, then it's really powerful, and it's not about getting through getting the prescription and checking off everything on the discharge instructions, which is often overwhelming for patients. It's stressful to come into the hospital. Patients don't want to be in a hospital. They don't want to be told to take 50 medications. They don't want to be told you need to go here, here, and here. So I think it's part of our job to tell them, you know, one step at a time towards your health and progress.
And it's a message that Jane Muir has taken to heart in her student life and early days of nursing, where the weight of professional responsibilities and the sheer physical workout on an active day in the clinic can take a toll.
Throughout undergrad, I taught fitness classes at the school's gym, and I still teach classes, group fitness. That's always been key for me to release from whatever tension and stress that I have. And since I started nursing, I've had to cut back and really readjust when I exercise and take some days off, just because working 12 hours is physically so exhausting. Your body is so sore. I've never felt so achy in my life, and I grew up playing competitive sports my whole life, and coming off of a shift and just completely passing out and waking up and being so sore and like your eyes are puffy even if you got enough sleep. So again, that goes back to being in this community where we've been taught, listen to your body, don't grind gears, don't white knuckle it. If you need to take a break, you need to take a break, and you need to listen to your body, because your body's going to know what you need. So, you know, being someone who's very type A when it comes to, like, I got to exercise, I got to do this, I got to do that, which is very common in this community at UVA. There's a lot of perfectionist personalities. There's a lot of type A. Being able to I've realized that a form of self-care for me has been to stop and just do less and know that if I do less, I'm recharging and I'm giving more the next time I go into work. And life isn't about doing the same exact thing every single day. It's about adapting to whatever changes come your way, and that's resiliency. That's bouncing back when you see something come at you.
Usually I like to go run because I don't really think about a lot of stuff. It's a way to just kind of step back and just listen to my breathing and get outside, and that kind of helps me. That's one of the ways that I de-stress, is like going on a run or going on a walk outside. And I think that because I like doing it, it helps me stay active, and I think that helps a lot. I like keeping a journal and just like before I go to bed, empty out any thoughts that are in my mind circling around. Usually that helps me fall asleep really quickly. And it's just kind of cool also to go back through the days. And if I'm feeling down or something, going back through and looking at good days and kind of helps bring things into perspective too.
Recently I've been exercising more, which has been really helpful.
Erica Hernandez, a UVA nursing student who was born in Bolivia and raised outside Washington, D.C.
I also, like Evie said, do like to write. So after, I try at least after each clinical experience that I have that impacts me in some way, I try to, you know, reflect on what happened, whether that be a good thing or a bad thing that occurred during clinical. I like having that, and that's kind of like my me time to really consider, you know, what could I have done better in this situation, or maybe just realize that I really couldn't have done anything like more than I did. And I think that's something really important to acknowledge as a nursing student, and also just in the future as a nurse. I think that's going to be very helpful.
I'm still pretty green, but I would imagine that there's a lot of moving parts, but then when you get out there, it's something different, and it just kind of piles up. And I think here at UVA with the Compassionate Care Initiative, we get a lot of exposure to that, and it's kind of like always in our ear, take care of yourself and like check in with yourself. And I think if I didn't have those tools, then I would have probably already felt the stress a lot more. I know that there is stress, and I know that I need to take care of it instead of kind of pushing it down. And I think if I pushed it down, it would build up so much quicker.
You're listening to Nurses of the Future, part of our podcast series, Resilient Nurses. I'm David Freudberg. You can learn more at humanmedia.org. That's humanmedia.org. And we invite you to subscribe to the free weekly podcast from our public radio series. Lots of stimulating documentaries and dialogues you may be interested in on healthcare and many other topics. It's available at iTunes and Stitcher. That podcast is entitled Humankind on Public Radio. Thanks very much for listening.